one to more to come. P. David Comics runs a bi-weekly podcast on graphic novel and comics publishing. I'm Calvin Reed.
And I'm
And I'm Kate Fitzsimmons.
And we're going to look back now at our trip to Comic-Con International, the biggest pop culture extravaganza in North America. I'm going to give you a few highlights from my trip there. And of course, once again, a Comic-Con, we're recovering. I'm exhausted but happy.
Yeah.
It is a really spectacular, and if I just say so myself, it seems a very smoothly run show. Not that there won't be some complaints about it, but certainly I thought it was one of the best run shows that I was able to attend. As far as the highlights of the show, the things that really hit me, well, clearly George R. R. Martin was probably at the top of the list. Obviously a prose author, obviously he has some comics in his background, but he was everywhere. He certainly was on everybody's mind and everybody's conversation.
Yeah, I would have to say that Game of Thrones was the biggest thing at Comic-Con, way bigger than any movie. People were cosplaying as it, some spectacular cosplay. Cast members were faded wherever they went. George R. R. Martin absolutely was, the belle of the ball.
I mean, with the TV series and the book coming out, it's clearly the fantasy event of the year. There's no two ways about it.
You know, everybody was talking about it. Moving down the line, certainly digital delivery was a big part of the show. Marvel announced a selected series going day and date. Viz Manga launched a four-pay site to online site to give digital access to his comics. That's going to be an interesting thing to watch. J Manga, the coalition of Japanese publishers, hoping to lure fans away from scanlation sites to four-pay sites, launched their site. I think there's going to be some controversy about that, about whether they can actually pull that off. Dark Horse had a really interesting launch. Three new series by PC Cast, the YA novelist Tom Morello, the guitarist for Rage Against the Machine, and film director, Hellboy director, Guillermo del Toro, also doing a comic series. And probably, for me, one of the more important announcements at the show, Joyce Brabner, Harvey Pekar's winner, has signed up to do a biography at Abrams that actually is going to be a graphic biography, and it will alternate chapters with interviews with people that she hopes to solicit that will talk about, how Harvey or how his stories impacted on his life.
Yep. Yes, that, just a taste of the news that was, spilling out at the show. Absolutely the biggest news, pop culture news event of the year. I think some of the things that I noticed was, one of the things was just how the show was run. There was a lot more security this year. Every year there's more security. This year exhibitors needed to have wristbands. So there was some complaining about that. I know a lot of people, they'd fallen off in the shower by the end of the 5-day fest.
And they gave paper wristbands and then expected them to stay on for 5 days?
Well, there was some talk about that. I mean, they were flimsy paper wristbands, so they weren't really very secure. I think in the future they'll need to have the plastic kind. But I supposedly there's going to be more technology involved. I think the thing is they're trying to crack down on counterfeiting badges or passes and swapping badges. Although, I mean, people could still walk out and give their badge to people. I saw that happen several times. But like as Calvin said, it was logistically the show was run really beautifully. The volunteers are very well trained, and the security was quite reasonable this year. I mean, they weren't like rousting up people from sitting down the floor like I've seen. I saw like really very few incidents. The one thing that there was a lot of complaints about was the buying badges on site, which people lined up at 4 a.m. to do. And getting into the show is very difficult, and it's not going to get any easier.
It wouldn't hurt if they had more people on the tables selling the badges. Like that way, instead of it being a really long line of people waiting forever for all the badges to sell, the badges would just sell quicker.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's more systemic than just how many people are sitting. I mean, one of my own beefs is that as a pro or a press, they don't let you get your badge until like 3 o'clock on Wednesday.
That's a real sore point, particularly if, as was the case for us, you're participating in a panel or another conference. It can make it really tough.
Especially because you're a pro. I mean,
your credentials up.
you're a pro, so obviously you're going to be taking part in panels and things. So it's
right.
not like you're a fan who can just
this,
drop everything.
I was in a very long line to get my panel and press credentials, and it moved, I have to say, pretty briskly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, they did what Kate suggested and had, like, 20 people working it. I mean, they could easily make the hours longer and have, just make it easier so you could just run by. Every other show has badge pickup the day before. There's no reason, but you know what? That's micro. It's almost like it's such a little nitpicky thing as opposed to the wonder and the splendor, the drama and the spectacle. There was so much going on in San Diego. There was so much that was off site. You know, we talked about Trickster last time and Calvin, I think Trickster was a big triumph, at least as far as socializing went. Don't you agree?
Oh, completely. Not only was it a venue kind of full of interesting work by interesting artists, a pop-up bookstore, programming, but it was a great little timeout lounge oasis. When you really needed to get off the floor, it was really conveniently located. And I have to mention the food trucks that were nearby.
The food trucks were awesome. Yeah, Trickster was absolutely the place to go. And after hours, people were hanging out. And I think it just made, I think this is a very mellow con. And I think it was just because people had a lot of places to go and knew that they would find the people they wanted to hang out with. And, it was always great for socializing. I mean, parties, incredible number of parties. But
Trickster actually made that even easier. I mean, even our traditional end of the con meetup, we moved the location because first of all, it's a much more convenient location to be than to be trapped in back behind the convention center.
I know. Even though I do like my crabs.
I do too. Joe's Crab Shack will always be forever in my heart. But Trickster was just too cool. Full of too much great stuff, really, to pass up. I was grabbed. I had a Trickster T-shirt on, and was grabbed walking down the hallways by someone who assumed I was part of the Trickster mob. And he just said, "I just got to see the thing." And I told him to get over there as soon as he could.
Trickster, it really was cool. They had art exhibits. They had an Akira Kurosawa art show on Friday night. They had like a lot of extracurricular. Mike Allred's band played on Saturday and Friday. I think Kirby Crackle played there as well. And there was a lot of cartoonists set up. Mike Mignola was there. Scott Morris. And there was signings going on constantly. There was just a full-fledged experience. So,
and it was a very conveniently located kind of timeout spot if you were walking the floor. It was a great place to go. You could see some cartoonists. You could talk to everybody. You could get your bearings.
Yeah. But, Kate, I'm more curious to see how the con was from your viewpoint, because often when you're there, it's very hard to see what was going on. So what did you think were the highlights?
Well, first off, I would like to address this to anyone who may be working in the comics industry who could be listening to this, although it's highly unlikely. Please, please, if you're making a big announcement, put your big announcement online. We want to link to you. We want to know what you're talking about. But instead, I would find these tantalizing PR tweets from, for example, IDW, the biggest culprit, saying, "Oh, we talked about great stuff at the panel." And then I would like spend an hour online trying to find out what they said at the panel. And it was just nowhere. And I was like, why? I want to give you publicity. Make my life easier.
That's the tweeter's dilemma. Am I going to tweet about what I'm seeing, or am I actually going to like do what I'm seeing?
Tweeter's dilemma, yeah.
I got several PR. I talked to some people who were like, okay, this is embargo. This is what's going out. And usually, like, the minute the panel begins, they'll send out their PR to their blast list. And, some comics companies do that. I mean, Marvel's very good. They'll send out stuff, embargoed images. And, they usually have surprises that are on the panel. There were leaks. There was one company that went and sent out an embargoed list. And, somebody forwarded it to another website, which ran it right away. And, they were going to get major press coverage for it. And it got canceled because of that. So, and after that, I could see why they would not want to do anything ahead of time. So,
I get that. What I meant is to, how even on The Beat, which is a fairly simple blog, it has the option to time delay something and it posts at a specific time.
Right.
And it would be really great if it doesn't even need to be right after the panel, just even within like a day of the panel.
Right.
The next day, you could just say like one paragraph going, "And today we announce that we're going day and date."
Well, you know, it really does take the birds of prey to cover Comic-Con, because you must have, you must have Oracle, and you know, Kate, you were our Oracle. So, but anything, was there anything else that
caught your eye? There were a lot of great things. Calvin already mentioned in passing the digital news that came out, although I'd like to emphasize that a little further. To clarify exactly what Marvel's going digital day and date on, their big thing this year is going to be the X-Men. That's what they're saying. They're saying that all their big events are going to be X-Men, 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 and they're even going to be sticking X-Men in other people's comics just so you can't possibly avoid X-Men. And so all of their X-Men comics are going digital day and date. All of them. Even their, like...
Was it really? No, was it... I thought it was the... Was it the Ultimates, or... I thought they mentioned about three different series, but maybe I'm wrong.
Ultimates, they're promising, will come out on time, which is interesting.
Right, yeah.
But they may be bringing out Ultimates day and date, but they're bringing out their big, big event, which is X-Men Schism, is going to be day and date. And then following that, anything that has a mutant in it will be day and date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which doesn't sound like much, but it's actually a lot of comics. And I think they've maybe noticed that they've been neglecting that line in favor of the Avengers for a few years, and they're like, maybe we should, these mutants, they make money, maybe we should go back, play with them some more? I don't know. And Viz is doing something amazing and wonderful that I hope other comic companies that are doing their own digital comics program listen to, in that they already had an app, but now, anything you've already purchased on the app, you are able to read on vizmanga.com. You're able to read on their Android app, on their tablet app, anything. Anything you buy on any of their platforms, you can read on any of their other platforms forever and ever. Amen.
Nice.
Yes, no, it's a, Viz is kind of quietly, or not so quietly, kind of moved kind of to the front of the room as far as digital access for manga.
Yeah, and you know, digital day and date, the whole digital invasion was a huge topic of any of the industry conferences. I mean, Calvin, you mentioned that we were at the ICVDO conference on Wednesday, which had like, you know, kind of a digital state of the industry. I was Comics Pro, had a whole bunch of programming on Friday, which I attended. There was a state of the industry panel. There was a DC panel, and then there was a general lunch that Diamond sponsored, where Dark Horse and DC and Diamond made announcements. And digital was, you know, a hot topic among retailers at all of these. And a couple of interesting notes, though. You know, DC has been talking about being day and date, and with their September launches, you know, Archie Comics has been day and date since April. And they even brought that up at their panel and said, you know, like DC's getting all this props for something that Archie's already been doing. And I don't know that they sell them that much in comic shops. I don't know that it's impacted their sales, you know. And Dark Horse also mentioned that since they started doing their digital comics, and they said, you know, have our sales gone down? And like, no hands went up in the room, except one person, Hakar D'Angelo of Earth 2, actually had a comment, which I missed because I was on the other side of the room. But, you know, I mean, this is happening. And, you know, we haven't seen sales fall off a cliff yet. So, you know, we don't, it's every state of the industry thing I went to really was like, I don't know.
Maybe day and date is not the end of the world.
I have to keep in mind, you know, this is really new. We are in an experimental period here. This is an amazing transition that's going on. And really, everything really from here on in is something of an experiment.
Oh, Calvin, I just checked what you said, and you're right. The entire Ultimates line is going day and date.
You know, there was just a couple of other news notes that were there at the show. Some other things that were, really big news. I think one of the biggest stories that was that Brian K. Vaughan is back. You know, the talented writer of Why the Last Man and Ex Machina. And, you know, he is an author whose books sell and sell and sell, and he has a huge following, but, he's been very, very quiet. He keeps his own counsel, but he announced a new book, for Image. It's called Saga, and it's a family Star Wars saga with art by Fiona Staples, and he sees it as an ongoing, not too many plot details released, but you know, if it has anything like Why the Last Man or Ex Machina, I'm there, and I think a lot of people will be. So,
and I've seen the art, it looks amazing, and I'm not an art snob, but I was just like, the plot, the author, the art, like, it's it's going to be huge.
Yeah, it's nice that Brian K. Vaughan found a female artist to work on that. You know, it's a horrible struggle to find women who can do comics.
But, you know,
oh, yes, it's so difficult. There aren't any of us. No.
I know. He's, you know, like I said, really heroic. But anyway.
Now the guy's even more popular than he already.
Yeah, exactly. You know, see, you know, IDW announced a lot of things that they're going to do a spirit art book. They've been doing these exclusive art books, and they're going to do one for the spirit. Looking at some of their other things that they're doing, they're publishing The Crow. They're publishing Popeye again, and there's some Burning Wrightson books. And they're also doing a Spider-Man artist edition, as they did for the Thor Walt Simonson edition, which sold out at the show, just sold like gangbusters. So, you know, they're definitely they definitely had some good announcements, even if they were not online. They did have some cool stuff going on. And
if I may, and just mention a couple of the announcements that came from Abrams Comics Arts imprint, the line of great books directed by Charles Kochman. Another great announcement there was the acquisition of the art of Dan Close, and it's going to be edited by Alvin Buenaventura of Buenaventura Press. So this is an art book, and it's also going to feature essays by Chip Kidd, I know, and Chris Ware, as well as several other essays as well. So that's clearly going to be a big book. And really, you know, Charlie has really very quietly, or not so quietly, really kind of established himself as really one of the really terrific sort of nonfiction publishers about comics who are working right out, who are working today. Another book to point out, I've kind of lost my notes here a little bit. Oh, of course, Kazu Kibuishi, who seems to be doing, who seems to be everywhere now. He's publishing the great Amulet series at Scholastic. He's now going to do another full-color anthology comic, and it's going to be called Explorer with the Mystery Boxes, and all of the anthologists will be creating comic stories based around the theme of the Mysterious Box.
Wow. He's always doing some great stuff. Oh, I think we're gonna another huge announcement. Actually, one of the biggest was Legendary Comics, and they had a big panel at the Indigo Ballroom, which I actually, well, by me, and you know, it was like they announced that everybody knew that they were going to do Frank Miller's Holy Terror book, which started life as a Batman, but now it's about a character called the Fixer taking on terrorists who destroy a city very much like York, or part of it anyway. But two other projects were announced. One is a re-release of Paul Pope's Pulp Hope art book with 100 extra pages, and another is a new book by Matt Wagner that he's doing with the owner of Legendary Entertainment, Thomas Tull, which is The Tower Chronicles.
According to their PR, it is about a supernatural bounty hunter.
So, you know, Legendary is coming along, and it was kind of fun to see, you know, a big panel in a big room and, you know, a full house. It was sandwiched in between Community and Joss Whedon. So, you know, comics have their own, comics still have a place at Comic-Con.
And if I could just hype a couple of more titles, I just, Oni Press just had some eye-popping books, in particular Petrograd, that it seems to be essentially a thriller set in Tsarist Russia. And, of course, a book that we've already mentioned on More to Come in the Past, but Ray Fawkes' One Soul, which is a sort of conceptual tour de force as it follows, 18 individuals by using the panel grid.
Yeah, there was a ton of stuff. But, you know, really the reality of Comic-Con is just that you know, there's the Torsten on my site. He counted up the hours of programming. It's something like 24 days of programming. I mean, literally, it would take 24 days to experience everything that is going on there. So, you know, and there's so many once in a lifetime opportunities. You really have to decide which it is you're going to do. I mean, you know, I was reading a blog by Jerry Alang Guillen, the cartoonist behind Elmer from the Philippines, and he was a guest of the show this year, and he hadn't been in 10 years, and he probably won't be back in 10 years. And you know, what a great time he was having. And I said hello to him at the Eisners, but, you know, it's not like we're going to see each other face to face again for, you know, maybe ever. And some of the Twilight kids, I mean, I know, you know, say Twilight ruined Comic-Con, but they were camped out for 2 nights. And Summit did something so smart. They had some of the cast members go out at like 6 a.m. on Thursday morning. Yeah, and they gave them some of the people waiting in line coffee and donuts. And you know what? That's really awesome. I mean, that is really a great PR stunt, but it's also just like, makes Comic-Con all the more
Remember,
memorable.
in the context of Comic-Con, people camping out half the night to get into these panels. It's humanitarian.
Yes. Well, everybody needs a donut, so.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike
let
some.
Let me leap in just for a second because I do want to. I wanted to mention a very quiet event that I actually was lucky to be a part of. And Dark Horse invited me to kind of one of their retailer dinners. So I was actually able to spend one evening kind of hanging out with Mike Richardson, the president of Dark Horse Books, along with Mike Mignola, Hollis B. McNeil, and Eric Powell. And it was great. We got a chance to sit around, have a few drinks. Talk about what they're working on, and as it turns out, Mike Richardson is a crazy New York Yankees fan.
Yeah.
when there was much bonding going on.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, you have these special moments at Comic-Con that can't happen anywhere else, and this is why people are willing to sit in line and stand in line and do anything to get in. Although I have to say, I think the way the show is taking over the whole town, I think you're going to see more and more people just coming, even without a badge and just hanging out. Like they had a Conan O'Brien art show that people were lined up for. They had Marvel monster trucks that people were trying to get into, in Petco Park. They had like Cirque du Soleil. They had Lord of the Rings. They had just, it was amazing. And, comics really were a part of it. I have to say, I think that there was no questioning what this Comic-Con was about. And, even with the Hollywood stuff, I think comics really held their own.
And I think we also have to mention that the Bee and Heidi McDonald were nominated for an Eisner this year for the best.
Oh, thanks for bringing that up, Kelly.
Best comics related. Well, I just want people to know that you were nominated. Obviously, you did.
Yes, and I lost. Yes,
you
thanks,
lost,
Kelly.
As I think I put somewhere else, you didn't win, but you're still a winner.
I mean, this is we're not bringing up the fact that you lost. We're bringing up the fact that, like, out of all the many, many comic sites out there, you got nominated for an Eisner.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, if I get a swelled head from that, it's just, it's time to move on, so.
But your listeners might not know, so we're telling your listeners.
3 hours this year, not too bad. I will say this, Jonathan Ross continues to be the funniest man on the planet. I think he should do the
He
whole
is
show.
So
yeah.
Hilarious. He really is. If only, more like when I was maybe back in the 90s, I was in England for the first time at the UKAC comic show, and they had a comics awards that Jonathan Ross emceed the whole thing, and I was there, so.
You can do it, guys.
Really mentioned very quickly that in an unusual circumstance, the big book of the evening, the best graphic album, there was a tie.
Yes.
I never recall that happening before.
No, I don't.
But it was a tie between Dan Closes Wilson from Drawn and Quarterly and Jim McCann and Janet Lee's Return of the Dapper Men from Arcade Press.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations. And I think, probably the highlight of the Eisner's was a great speech by the twins, Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. They, just about how great it is to be in comics. And, they won for Day Tripper, a book which has really, really gotten quite a... some momentum behind it, and it's an excellent story about what happens if the main character dies at different points in his life. It's really about the fragility of life, and the fragility of life is something that you really learn a lot about at Comic-Con.
Well, and to make it sound like slightly less depressing, although you would think a book about a guy dying a lot would be depressing, but he really only dies at the end of each installment, or about like very nearly the end of each installment, is it's actually about memory, how people remember you and how they see you based on that snapshot of your life. And it's really the same guy and the same life, but it looks so different if it ends at different points.
Yeah, I really think it's a neoclassic in the making. So already made.
I followed it as it was coming out from Vertigo, and I was just floored.
I think we've probably covered pretty much everything we need to for today's.
I think we've recovered everything that our minds can, feeble minds wrap themselves around for now, so.
Well, we're still recovering. I'm still recovering from Comic-Con, so.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for that full night's sleep that I haven't had in 3 weeks.
All right.
Are you having trouble reacclimating to having like your own bed again?
No, that's not a problem. It's just knowing that I can't be in my own bed again yet. So.
All right.
Well, thanks again to Kate for manning the home fires while we were gone, and Kelvin, and you know, we'll do it again next year with a whole different. I'm making my notes now for what to do in 2012.
Here we go. We're getting prepared for Comic-Con 2012 right now, which will be much earlier next year, I see.
Yes.
When is it coming out next year?
It's only like a week earlier, but it's going to seem like a month earlier, since a month is a week at Comic-Con time. But
yes. And on that note, we'll end today's podcast, and as always, there's more to come.
See you next time.
And now, More to Come, the PW Comics World podcast, is available free on iTunes, in subscription or individual episode format. Subscribe and never miss another episode.